you're ready to stand on the line, if you're ready to fight back and serve it to the criminals trying to enslave you and steal your wealth through monetary creation and exorbitant taxation, you're in the right place. Welcome back to another edition of the Prepper Recon Podcast. Whether your plan is to bug out or bug in, CampingSurvival.com has all of your preparedness needs, including fish antibiotics, long-term storage food, water filters, bug-out bags, and first aid kits. Use coupon code PREPPERRECON for 5% off your entire order at CampingSurvival.com. While you're at PrepperRecon.com, stop by the Prepper Recon Supply Store. We've got a great selection of Molly compression packs, hydration kits, and our new concealed carry tactical slings. All the packs and slings come with your choice of patch to let liberals know how you feel. We have some very cool Moulin Lay patches, come and take it patches, sheepdog, zombie response team, and matching U.S. flag patches. Of course, we still have our fully stocked Molly-compatible individual first aid kits as well. Just click the store tab at the top of the PrepperRecon.com homepage. Today's guest is Weston Warren. Weston was on the show a few weeks back to talk about the indoor air purification technology that he's developed. Weston, welcome back.
Good to be back. How are you doing?
Very good. Very good. And it's great to have you on the show. Now, you've studied environmental sciences. Is that correct?
Yes, that is.
And now, something many of us are confused about is global warming. With the massive freeze we had last year, you know, they had to bring the polar bears inside. They couldn't stay outside at the zoo because it was too cold for the polar bears. And then this year, we had a really, really early blizzard where the Northeast got dumped with 6 feet of snow. This just kind of doesn't add up to the global warming thing that we've been fed for a couple of decades now. Can you help us understand what's happening?
Yes, I can. The information I review will be it's very interesting. But it could be somewhat controversial as far as there's a lot of people that fully believe in global warming. It's almost become a religion for some. A lot of government agencies and institutions have gotten on that bandwagon. So when I talk about this information in this interview, those of that mindset that will be listening tend to get a little defensive. And I want to respect their beliefs and understandings, and I don't want to be arrogant and come across as a know-it-all, but I think this information is very important, and it'll step on some of their toes, but I hope they're open-minded with what I'm about to reveal, and they can take time to digest it and ponder it. That's all I ask, and so I wanted to give that heads up before we start. You mentioned we experienced last year, we had a polar vortex just like this year with the bitter cold temperatures. We had that here in Missouri and all the snow that you mentioned. We've also had the fact that the ice caps in the North Pole region have grown between 43% and 47% larger. So definitely that's contrary to global warming because the ice shelf is thickening and widening. There's some satellite images that NASA has show the ice now versus 3 years ago, and you can see how much it's grown. But the long-term forecast is definitely we're in a global cooling trend. I'll explain how extensive it will be, not global warming. And I'll start this conversation by explaining how we got on this global warming kick or bandwagon to begin with. The IPCC, the Intergovernmental Panel of Climate Change that the United Nations sponsors, they started to, since the formation of the United Nations, they started to really gather more weather records, temperature data, atmospheric land and water temperatures, better records, and so forth, really began since the UN, that time period, late 40s. And what was interesting is between 1910 and 1930, there were pretty accurate records by government agencies back in the late 1800s. But from 1910 to 1930, there was a slight temperature warm-up trend, and then it went sideways for about 20 years, stayed consistent between 1930 and 1950. Then the temperatures started to go down a little bit to 1976 or so. And that's, depending on the age of the audience listening, there was a period back then where there was a concern of global cooling. And that was spoken about in universities and climatologists, environmental scientists such as myself, because of the lateral temperature movements from 1930 to 50, then the temperatures started dropping a little bit, and that was a big concern. And then the temperature started to uptick from 1976, and then it peaked around 2000, between 2008 and 2010. Well, with the scientific community, when they saw the temperature rise between 1976 and 2008 and 10, they're trying to figure out, well, was this an anomaly? What's causing the rises in temperature? Because scientists, out of curiosity, always want to have an answer for everything that's going on, or at least find out, because they're curious by nature. Well, with funding and research, why these temperatures were rising, they were keeping track of CO2, carbon dioxide levels, and they were also rising. So it was easy to do a simplified linear math equation and equate from 1976 to recent, say 2010. Well, we've got gradual temperature increases and CO2 is increasing. So they found a dynamic that a signal of temperature rising in CO2 that coincided, and they quickly came to a conclusion. Well, that's it. That here we have a connection. Temperatures are rising because CO2 levels are rising. And wow, if this trend continues and we don't get a handle of the CO2, we're going to have big problems in the future. So that created a kind of a small panic in the international community, in the UN funding studies. Well, is this true? And there's a lot of universities and PhDs that were hungry. This is my opinion, so some people are going to get mad. But they're hungry for grants and research money, because just because you're a scientist, you still have a house payment and kids to send to school and credit cards to pay, and it's hard to find a job. So if they could accept funding for climate change studies, they signed up, because it kept their research labs open, kept money flowing in and making payroll. I guess I can't blame them for that. Everyone needs to work. But the motives, I believe, were a little skewed. And the biggest mistake they made, which I found out dealing with a good friend of mine, Greg Schuller, he's part of a team of brilliant physicists called Dynamic Predictables. They're a company that has long-term climate projections that they give to governments and military organizations. This information is not available to the public. I'm allowed to, on this interview, describe over the airwaves their statistics. This is going to be a rare interview. It's priceless, but I'm not able to show the graphs or charts. If that's going to be released, Dynamic Predictables will have to do that on their site. But what Greg and the other physicists have told me, the mistake that has been made for the last 40 plus years by government agencies, environmentalists, and some universities, is they were using linear methods or linear mathematical solutions to try to solve a non-equilibrium dynamic or an active system. So those are big fancy words. Put it in layman's terms, what that means is our planetary system and our solar system is a non-equilibrium dynamic. In other words, it's constantly changing. It's an interactive system. You have planets that wobble and are tilted and rotate and travel at different speeds. The speed at which our solar system travels the Milky Way isn't necessarily on cruise control, where it's always going at the same speed.
Would that account for like the old Babylonian calendar when they used to have 360 days and now we have to have 365? Because if they had actually made a calendar that was that far off, I mean, their seasons would be switching every 3 or 4 years by almost a month. So, you know, there's no way that their calendar was so inaccurate. So there has to have been some serious changes from those ancient times to now. Would that be correct?
Yep. And that's part of my theory, and I would agree with you. Absolutely. I'll go back to, if I forget, you can remind me. I'll go back for the listening audience to describe a little bit what I mean by a linear method versus non-equilibrium method or dynamics, and the mistake that the universities and other government institutions have made about global warming. But before I get to that, you brought up a point. See, we travel, our solar system, our Milky Way is a spiral, and it has four major arms. You got the Sagittarius, Perseus, Norma, and Centauros arms. Our solar system is in a smaller spiral arm called the Orion arm. And there's other experts that would be better than I am at explaining this, but this will be good enough to get the point. So we're in a smaller arm, not one of the big four arms of our Milky Way galaxy, but our solar system, it takes about 230 million years to make one complete orbit around the center of our Milky Way galaxy. So if you picture, if you're staring at a clock, the face of a clock, picture if our solar system is at the 2 o'clock position, it encounters different dynamic forces than if our solar system's at the 7 o'clock position. Just because of where it's located, in its orbit around the center of the Milky Way galaxy. So a lot can happen in a 230 million year period for it to make one complete orbit. So not only, to put it in perspective, that's how big, 230 million years to make one orbit. While it's doing that, it's also oscillating. If you look at a sine or cosine wave, it has its peaks and troughs. So it takes 70 million years to go from its low point to its high point back to its low point, or every 35 million years, our solar system intersects the galactic plane, the center of the galactic plane. So there's just so many dynamic forces that planets and stars go through as they're rotating, and speeds at which they're traveling through the etheric field, that you can't have a linear system. It just doesn't fit. A linear system would mean that there are constants with very little variation. Well, that's not the case at all. So they had simple mathematical equations that are designed for linear, fixed environmental conditions. And if you use those linear mathematical equations on a nonlinear system, the data is going to be wrong every single time. So what they've done is, when they've made these computer models, NOAA and NASA and other agencies, they're using the wrong math. They're using an easier series of mathematical equations to come up with models of warming trends that aren't true. So dynamic predictables, and these physicists with Greg have found how to use a very complicated mathematical systems that take into account a non-equilibrium dynamic, which is what our planet Earth or our solar system operates. It operates in a non-equilibrium dynamics. The math is very, very complicated with sine and cosine calculations using 256-year and 64-year dynamics with zero phase shifts. A lot of mathematicians would understand what that means. But it's very hard math, and they did their homework. They did long, long, tedious nights and weeks and months and years of these mathematical equations, which aren't easy to do. And if you don't like it, you're going to steer away from it. But they're more accurate in their climate predictions because of the extra sophisticated math and series of mathematics they use for a non-equilibrium system. And that's why their climate projections are spot on. And it's only governments and militaries that they kind of appeal to. So what their trend had found out is we kind of peaked around 2008-ish. You know, you can give or take a couple of years. And we're in a long-term colding trend that the Earth has repeated, and there's the actual data to prove these statistics. This is a cycle that has been here before and is repeating and will be here long after we're gone. But the temperatures are going to continue to steadily drop and reach its coldest point to about year 2100. And in 2100, year 2100, we're going to be very similar to a pattern that developed in around 1850. And what that means is, believe it or not, in 2100, the winters will be much longer and so severe that the Mississippi River will be frozen at New Orleans. And they estimate that the Gulf of Mexico will be frozen approximately 6 miles from the coast during the winter.
Wow.
Sometimes you can look up, there's old pictures in that time period where Niagara Falls was frozen solid and people were ice skating in those colder temperatures. And it stays that way with a slight uptick from year 2100 to 2130. Very, very slight uptick. Then it falls back down in year 2150 to those cold temperatures where it's frozen, 6 miles, Gulf of Mexico. So that includes Mississippi, Alabama, New Orleans. And then it slowly gets warmer from year 2160 until 2265. Year 2265, temperatures will be like they were 2 years ago. So that's the long-term climate projection. What that means, how's that relevant to us? Well, it should be relevant to us, but also the next generation, our kids and grandchildren, because they're going to be alive when this gets its coldest in year 2100. The growing season will be shorter and shorter, so the winters will last longer, and your production in Canada, in northern United States, Poland, at that point will be non-existent. The winters will be too long. The problem with that is, as everyone knows, most of the population live in the northern hemisphere, and what really feeds the world, the main breadbaskets are Canada, United States, Poland, Ukraine, and Brazil. Well, Brazil's in the southern hemisphere, so let's concentrate on the northern hemisphere. This long-term colding trend is going to affect food production globally. So if if I were a government official, and what governments technically, with finger quotes in the air, are supposed to protect and guide their citizenry and civilization, my personal thoughts are, instead of the trillions of dollars in military expenditures and so forth, which I don't agree with, governments should really be planning for this long-term, accurate global cooling trend and figure out how they're going to feed their citizenry in the world when the growing season gets shorter and most of the countries of Canada, United States, Poland won't be able to grow corn, wheat, rapeseed, and other commodities.
Can you give us a little snapshot of what we're going to be looking at 5 years out, 10 years out, and 20 years out? So we'll say in 2020, what are we looking at? And 2025 and 2035.
Okay. We're basically, you can we peaked in 2008. So from 2006, 7, 8, the temperatures start to drop. To answer your question, we'll go back in time. So in 2020, we will have temperatures in 2020. Let me look at this. Like we had in 1976. And in 2030, we'll have temperatures like we had in 1945. And then it really starts getting noticeably cold in longer winters in 2080. And it's a fast drop from year 2080 to 2100, those 20 years. So the next 5 or 10 years, it's not cataclysmic. So they'll still be growing food in Canada and the United States. But the serious concern of temperature dropping is 2075, because from year 2075 to year 2100, it's a very fast temperature drop. It's way too late for any governments or even individuals to prepare after 2075. If they don't have greenhouses in effect and growing techniques for greenhouses and an energy supply before 2070, they're not going to make it. So the listeners, you don't panic. Nothing's going to collapse in the next 10 or 15 years, and we're not going to not have food at grocery stores. That if that happens, it's a different reason. But with climate, you have to think geologically. You have to think hundreds and thousands of years, not short terms. So this information really, to digest, is living. It's the mindset of living and building concepts, home construction, and farming techniques. Start thinking about it now for our children and grandchildren. They are going to be lassoed with this. So current 2x4, 2x6 construction with your fiberglass or blow-in insulation, even isolene, the foam insulation spring, those building techniques aren't. That's not what you want to do in Canada, Northern Europe, Northern United States. So you want to build more energy efficient homes like insulated concrete forms that have a R50 rating, and they maintain, even if temperatures are 0 or 10 degrees, like a cave, they'll maintain a 50 degree temperature year round. You want to adopt those building techniques, and then you want indoor greenhouse growing techniques well established before year 2070.
It's time for a quick break, and we'll be right back. The dollar's lost over 90% of its purchasing power since 1971. Silver, on the other hand, has proved to be a very stable form of wealth preservation over the years. And where do you buy silver? Silver.com, of course. Silver.com offers fantastic prices on silver and gold. Check out silver.com today. So you don't expect this to even be something that would affect the food production even over the next 20 years?
Well, it will, but not to where the average citizenry can notice it. I think farmers up north in Canada, now they'll notice a shorter growing season, yes, in the next 15 or 18 years, but it's not going to bankrupt them, and they'll have crop failure. But they'll start to, by year 2070, they're going to have a hard time unless they have developed greenhouses and year-round growing with an energy source, whether it's solar or something of that nature. So there's time to prepare, but humans have a tendency to procrastinate until the last minute. And this, I guess the warning that I'd be giving and Greg and with their company is to start adopting, start using your heads. The communities, governments, even individuals, start in starting with the youth. We need to start teaching in these northern climates better building techniques for warmer housing that are more energy efficient, and then also growing techniques. Don't wait. My words of caution, because I don't think I'll be here in 2070. Who knows? But to have this well in place before 2070, well, really, now's a good time to start with educating the youth, and then governments run as slow as molasses, but for them to start adopting budgets and research on growing techniques that are year-round, but they're resistant to outside temperatures, which is greenhouses. There's modules now. You've probably seen them on the internet where they take these shipping containers. Typically, they come overseas on the shipping vessels, and then they can load them on semi-trucks or railroad cars, but they're the 40-foot-long or 80-foot-long steel structures. There's a lot of companies now that convert those into greenhouses with LED, very energy efficient grow lamps with the different wavelengths, white, yellows, and blue wavelengths for growing. And you could stack them 10 high, 20 high. So you could literally have stackable indoor growing farms in the bitter cold in Canada, and the people can still eat, even though temperatures are things like that need to start to be considered, and technology steered that way, research and development, so that we're not caught off guard. But I think I'm rare. Most people don't think that far in the future or plan. They kind of wait to the last minute. But there'll be enough listening out there that hopefully they'll respond to this information, and I'm not wasting my time.
Yeah, and if you've got kids, if your wife just had a baby yesterday, that child would be 55 years old in 2070. You know, probably getting near to the point of starting to think about retirement, and probably not in a great position to be thinking about completely radically changing their lifestyle. So, you know, the earlier you get this information, the better. If you've got a 10-year-old, that 10-year-old's going to be 65 in 2070, and
That's right. And
a 20-year-old's going to be 75. So the 75-year-old is going to be even in a less favorable position to be making drastic changes to their lifestyle. So it's certainly something a great thing for them to start keeping their eye on right now. And you know, like we saw last year with the polar vortex, you know. These are sort of the trend lines, and then anytime you have a downward trend line, you can always get sort of these black swan years that you know, are X amount of standard deviations away from the mean, to where you could have a couple of years or a year or two in a row even throughout that overall trend line where we do have some crop failure. So certainly something that everybody can keep an eye on. Now, one of the things that Revelations mentions in Revelation 6:6 is a quart of wheat for a day's wages and three quarts of barley for a day's wages. That sounds like hyperinflation for food, and that's something that certainly sounds like it could be triggered by extreme weather, whether it's droughts or this cooling trend, or you know, some black swan years in there on a downward cooling trend like that. What do you think?
Yes, that'll happen because these hiccups that you mentioned, despite this long-term colding trend, and there's no way we're going to change it, so we'll have to deal with it. You're right. There's going to be typical cases where you could have a polar vortex that hits in mid-March or late March, and it freezes crops that was unexpected. Maybe reached down to Florida, and it was a 4 or 5 day cold snap, well, that was enough to kill the citrus crops. Or just something simple as Yellowstone, a super volcano that's been active. I'm sure most of the audience, your listening audience, is awake and attuned to this. If Yellowstone popped, the devastation that would have with the ash suspended in the air, it's like a nuclear winter, that would affect the entire northern hemisphere, drop temperatures by permitting the sun's rays from penetrating, and then the ash falls probably, I've had some geology as environmental science, you have to, but I'm not a 100% geologist, but it's, I think that ring, if you take a ring of probably 400 miles radius of Yellowstone, all that ash that falls in there turns the soil acidic. Well, you can forget any kind of growing in Canada and Kansas and Iowa. So even that event would affect food prices and the availability of the soil to produce, because it takes a long time for soil to recover from acidic conditions such as a volcano aftermath of volcanic ash. So all those things, it's just prudent to be aware. And like you mentioned in Bible prophecy, that's not a joke. They didn't make these things up through their visions and inspiration. It's just smart to think about how to feed yourself and be prepared for long-term trends or these, like you mentioned, these hiccups that are definitely there. And see, there's ways to prepare. If a government's asleep at the switch, that doesn't mean you have to be. So you made a good point. I'm glad you brought that up. If you have a newborn the last few weeks or few months or a 10-year-old, they're going to be around to see this. So you care about them. And if you have any grandchildren, same thing. Well, now's the time to – I don't think I'm too early on my Paul Revere campaign kind of warning of what's coming. It's good to start teaching the youth farming techniques and build your own greenhouse and learn how to grow year round. And fortunately, we've got better technology with solar panels and lighting with these LEDs that are energy efficient and they're not hot as they used to be. So it's very feasible to maybe grow food year round in these northern climates. Start developing that now. That'd be a great business to get into. Year-round growing. It's organic food, very healthy. You're getting away from the GMOs. And you start now. Now you've also trained the next one or two generations behind you. I think it's a smart way to go.
And I'm 44. So in 55 years, if I'm still around, at 2070, I would be 99, which it might be very unlikely. But my grandmother's 101. So it's not impossible by any stretch, you know. She's already made it 2 years past that and really shows no sign of quitting. So it's certainly feasible. And, you know, and if I am around at 99, the last thing I'm going to be wanting to do, though, is worry about this stuff. So, you know, it's certainly things that I'm going to keep in mind throughout my long-term planning and preparing, because you have to make sure that you're financially in the best shape and maybe geospatially, you know, in the best shape possible, making sure that you're in a survivable climate for if these types of things happen, you know, for the long term. And you have to do that planning now. You know, my grandmother she did fairly good planning, and so she's got the money to make sure that she's in a good position and the, you know, she has a sort of a semi-assisted living facility where she's at. And, you know, I'm sure that she probably had never intended on living that long, but it's a good thing that she had the financial wherewithal to do it once she did end up living that long. So you kind of have to prepare for the longest possible scenario. And then, you know, if you get called home early, you know, glory, hallelujah.
Right, because if I kind of tie in the interview we had last, as your audience might remember, I'm the co-inventor of that photo catalytic oxidation that NASA developed originally, and I was on the scientific team later that improved it. But part of the motivation for the research, which I this is just a side note, you know, there's over 1,500 cases of Ebola virus, and there was only 40 when we spoke last. So it is spreading in the United States, even though the media was forced to kind of not cover it. But besides the or PCO technology to kill viruses and pathogens in the air and surfaces from preventing pandemics, it was also developed for indoor plant growing. Because if you recall, I mentioned in the space program, they had these hydroponic plants. Because if there's any type of long-term space exploration, you need to be able to grow your food. Well, the reason why I'm tying this in is, as we're forced to have more indoor growing, greenhouses or these growing pods that are popping up, our technology, the reason why we worked so hard on this is we knew that indoor growing would be necessary for human society in these colder regions. This kills plant pathogens and creates a very healthy environment for plants, but there's nothing toxic. There's no pesticides, herbicides, or irradiation, so you can have year-round growing with the photocatalytic oxidation, the bipolar ion clusters, and have zero crop failure. It's being installed right now. There's greenhouses around the world that have installed – this is not a sales pitch. I'm just telling you, it's being used right now in greenhouses that supply for Whole Foods and other organic grocery stores, having problems with the Stachybotry, the S. charum molds, yellow, black, green molds. This eliminates all those plant pathogens. They're having 100% crop success, and it's already being implemented. But I knew with these long-term forecasts, part of my goal in life, not that I can save the world single-handedly, but that's my goal as a research scientist, is everything that I invent, including a grain remediation that I'm working on, how to take contaminated grain and salvage it so it's edible for humans and animals, because over a fifth of the world's grain is lost in storage due to microbial contamination. But all of this research I'm doing to help, because mankind is, the tsunami is coming where there'll not be enough food in every cup, every scoop of grain is going to be precious, like you said, worth its weight in gold, or a day's wage for a cup of grain. Those days are coming, and the technology that I have was steered to help maximize crop yield and prevent crop failure to try to survive what's coming. Give us a standing chance. So I'm just not sitting idle. I'm fighting using all of my skill and knowledge to invent safe technologies to help with food production and keep people healthy.
And then on top of the really bad freeze last year, we had that horrible drought in the West, and that had a lot of effects on crops.
Yeah, it's really bad in California because they it's getting close to where almost it's not going to be repairable, and so much produce comes out of California people don't realize. And this is years. Their water tables are about gone. And then you get on the other side of the Rockies, Las Vegas is sinking, and their aquifers is about gone. So water issues, as you mentioned, is another – wars will be being fought over fresh water access. That's a big problem right now in Pakistan and India, fighting over the Indus River, where they've got armies facing each other. And that's a very geopolitical hotspot that doesn't get much news media, but that's fighting over the water, and Pakistan really needs it. And the UN treaty gave the rights to Pakistan, but allows India to use it for irrigation and hydropower. And there's some tensions over that. So, yeah, there's a lot that's on the plate right now with mankind. It can go sideways very quickly. It's scary times. It's unpredictable that's going to happen, but it's also, I believe, a time to have faith, not to get preachy with the audience, but these are interesting times that we live in, for sure.
Yeah. And so it makes sense to have some basic food storage even right now.
Of course. That's basic insurance. Just because, let's say there isn't any Armageddon scenario or solar flare like the Carrington event back in the 1800s where it fried all the cable communication network. It's just, you never know when there's going to be a grid that goes down or a tornado, hurricane, something of that nature. There could be a trucker's strike that happens. And so, I think the average grocery store, within 3 days, the shelves could be empty. So it just makes common sense to have 6 months storable food, water filters, gravity-fed water filters, and sanitization tablets. That, to me, see, if you're a, I might be getting on my soapbox, but if you're a true man or head of a household, your obligation really is the protection of your family, and as far as its morality and spirituality, and also provisions. So maybe instead of watching football and baseball or things of that nature, you should prepare for the what ifs for your family, and having certain provisions like that and a backup generator. And it's just common sense. So maybe hold off on the new pickup truck, drive it for a couple more years, but make sure you have some storable food and a solar generator and water filters. And that's being a true father, a true husband, because you're thinking of your family and you're being wise.
And maybe a little backyard garden too, because that's something I see a lot of preppers, and they'll buy these survival seed vaults, which are probably good because it is keeping that seed, those seeds will last for a long, long time the way that they're sealed in there. But if you've never grown a garden, that learning curve is going to take you out, because it's not something that you do. You go out and you dig a hole in the backyard, and 6 months later you got a crop of corn. There's a huge learning curve with having a garden, and I've had to go through that over the past, I'd say, 5 years. And every year I'm learning more and more. Every time I have a new garden, I learn something else, and I'm sure I'll continue to learn going forward with that. And even after doing it for 5 years, if I were to have to produce 100% of my own food, I'd be really in a crunch. And if I just needed to supplement because fresh vegetables were too high, maybe you could still get rice and beans and things like that, but fresh vegetables just became inaccessible. I could certainly supplement my diet and make sure that I had some fresh green things to provide for my family.
Well, Mark, that's an excellent point. I'm glad you brought that up, because you're absolutely right. It takes over 2 years to get an established garden, and you better start practicing now, because it's a tough skill to have that green thumb. There's an art to it. You better start learning now than when you really need to. And the one thing to throw out there for some of the advanced science research, I don't know if you've heard this before, this might sound way out there, but at least I'll, no pun intended, I'll plant the seeds for your audience to think about. When you plant, the world we live in today with grocery stores and drive-through fast food restaurants, that's not reality. How we were designed on this planet is more like the indigenous tribes worldwide. Two things to remember. How seeds work, we're all supposed to work the land ourselves. And how it's supposed to work is you're supposed to take a seed and put it underneath your tongue, and your saliva containing your DNA will coat the pericarp, the outer coating of the seed. You take, say it's a carrot seed or broccoli or lettuce. Each seed you're supposed to put in your mouth, get your coated DNA saliva on it, plant it one by one. Do a carrot seed, do broccoli, one by, and what happens is that particular garden, that is Mark's garden, and the seed with your DNA information will know what nutrients and how to grow that carrot, so that when you eat that carrot has grown and is custom to your body's blood chemistry and your bone marrow and your nutrients. Now, if your wife is doing it, and say you have a son or daughter, their carrot is going to be different than your carrot and your wife's carrot. People don't even realize how this works at a biological level. That's not taught in universities or schools. So we're meant to grow our own food that's been custom tailored to our DNA by one, our saliva on the seed. So that takes time. You can imagine how much time that takes. Then it's customized. And when you're in the garden, you should be barefoot because it's important for because we're a biochemical, we have electrical signals and so do plants. When you're barefoot, you're grounded. When you wear shoes, boots or tennis shoes with rubber soles, you're not grounded. So working with the soil, barefoot and in your hands, there's a symbiotic relationship between you and the plant. And I know this might sound corny, but you become one. And that's how we're meant to be, but we've been disconnected by this false reality. I know I'm getting on my soapbox, but driving to the grocery store and you're buying a carrot, you don't know what farmer planted the carrot. It could be five states away or from Chile. Who knows? It doesn't have your DNA signature on it, so the nutritional value is not there. That's a false reality. So the sooner we can learn how nature works and how we were designed and teach our children how to work in the garden – and it doesn't matter what the temperature is. You get used to not having shoes, and you're talking to the plants. The plants respond to your voice. They like laughter. They can hear you. There's even studies to show that while you're talking, plants will move towards you, almost like they're listening. But there's energy signatures that the plants are picking up. Well, then when you eat the plant, everything is recycled. Even when we die, we decompose and turn back into soil. That's how we're really supposed to live and be connected with the earth, and we're not taught that. So we are very alienated from nature and how we're designed. So we really, there's no pun intended, we need to get back to the roots of learning to work the earth and be one with the soil and the communication with the plants and animals. I know people think, well, you're a tree hugger, but I'm a research scientist, and I'm telling you this is true. The work I've done in labs, what I'm discovering every week is just blowing my mind. And I'm glad you have shows like this, Mark, because I'm just so grateful of your shows and your listening ear and your audience, because sooner or later someone will hear this and they'll think about it. They think, wow, Weston's kind of, that's a weird concept. I never heard of that. But I tell you, they're going to remember what I mentioned about the seed encoding DNA. Next time they're in a grocery store grabbing carrots, broccoli, or celery, they're going to think of what I said. And if I'm telling the truth, which I am, it will resonate. Your gut core will realize that I'm not lying and I'm telling the truth, and it'll stick. And I think what I'm saying is crucial, and I think long-term it's life-saving for us as a species.
Sounds very different than the Monsanto model of having this genetically modified stuff that'll basically grow on concrete with no water. So I think that what we're going to have to do is probably get you back on in the spring when it's near planting time and talk about gardening and some different techniques that I've never heard of before, and I'm sure that a lot of people out there would be very interested to hear more about that. Would that be good?
Oh, that'd be perfect. Like you said, spring for the growing season, and I can talk more about how our relationship works with plants and soil composition, because this is real science, not taught in schools and universities, and the ruling elite, this information's on lockdown. They do not want us to know how it really works and how it can benefit. So anytime you can have me on and we can have this discussion, it's great. I'm all for it. And I love our interviews anyway, Mark. I think you're just a great person.
Thank you very much. Now, Weston, tell the folks where they can find you and where they can go to learn more about your indoor purification technology and all of that.
Yeah, right, for plants and growing. It's globalenvirotech.com, globalenvirotech.com. And I don't do the Facebook and Twitter and so forth. I think there are sinister motives in that, but I am on LinkedIn. That's kind of a social media, but it's business-oriented for professionals. People can find me on LinkedIn or globalenvirotech.com. There's email contact and my phone number. In fact, Mark, some of my last presentation, I've had a lot of calls from all over the world about the PCO technology. I even had one of your avid listeners flew in from the East Coast and just spent 2 days with me regarding this technology. And your show has a great impact. And a lot of your listeners have called and got me personally, and they're like, is this Weston? Absolutely. You can actually call me, and hopefully I won't get any prank phone calls or death threats. But
all right.
Everyone's been nice and kind.
All right. Well, Happy New Year, and thanks again for taking time to come on the show at this really busy time of year.
No problem, Mark, and we'll talk in the spring.
Are we living in a time of which there is more prophetic writings than of any period in history? Watch through the eyes of Noah Parker and his family as a global empire takes shape. Ancient writings are fulfilled, and the last days fall upon the once great United States of America. The Days of Noah, Book 1, Conspiracy, by Mark Goodwin, is a fast-paced fiction thriller which looks at how modern conspiracies could play into biblical prophecy concerning end times. Buy The Days of Noah in paperback, Kindle, or audio edition at Amazon.com today.